And now, Chapter 12, The Brahmin Sudama, Blessed by Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of all living entities, knows very well everyone's heart. He is especially inclined to the Brahmin devotees. Lord Krishna is also called Brahmanya Dev, which means that he is worshipped by the Brahmins. Therefore, it is understood that a devotee who is fully surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead has already acquired the position of a Brahmin. Without becoming a Brahmin, one cannot approach the Supreme Brahmin, Lord Krishna. Krishna is especially concerned with vanquishing the distress of his devotees, and he is the only shelter of pure devotees. Lord Krishna engaged for a long time in talking with Sudama Vipra about their past association. Then, just to enjoy the company of an old friend, Lord Krishna began to smile and asked, "My dear friend, what have you brought for me? Has your wife given you some nice edible for me?" While addressing his friend, Lord Krishna looked upon him and smiled with great love. He continued, "My dear friend, you must have brought some presentation for me from your home." Lord Krishna knew that Sudama was hesitating to present him the paltry chipped rice, which was actually unfit for his eating. Understanding the mind of Sudama Vipra, the Lord said, "My dear friend, I am certainly not in need of anything. But if my devotee gives me something as an offering of love, even though it may be very insignificant, I accept it with great pleasure. On the other hand, if a person is not a devotee, even though he may offer me very valuable things, I do not like to accept them. I actually accept only things offered to me in devotion and love. Otherwise, however valuable a thing may be, I do not accept it. If my pure devotee offers me even the most insignificant things, a little flower, a little piece of leaf, a little water, but saturates the offering in devotional love, then not only do I gladly accept such an offering, but I eat it with great pleasure." Lord Krishna assured Sudama Vipra that he would be very glad to accept the chipped rice he had brought from home. Yet out of great shyness, Sudama Vipra hesitated to present it to the Lord. He was thinking, "How can I offer such insignificant things to Krishna?" And he simply bowed his head. Lord Krishna, the Supersoul, knows everything in everyone's heart. He knows everyone's determination and everyone's want. He knew, therefore, the reason for Sudama Vipra's coming to him. He knew that, driven by extreme poverty, he had come there at the request of his wife. Thinking of Sudama as his very dear class friend, he knew that Sudama's love for him as a friend was never tainted by any desire for material benefit. Krishna thought, "Sudama has not come asking anything from me. Being obliged by the request of his wife, he has come to see me just to please her." Lord Krishna therefore decided that he would give more material opulence to Sudama Vipra than could be imagined even by the King of Heaven. He then snatched the bundle of chipped rice, which was hanging on the shoulder of the poor Brahmin, packed in one corner of his wrapper, and said, "What is this? My dear friend, you have brought me nice, palatable chipped rice." He encouraged Sudama Vipra, saying, "I consider that this quantity of chipped rice will satisfy not only me, but the whole creation." It is understood from this statement that Krishna, being the original source of everything, is the root of the entire creation. as watering the root of a tree immediately distributes water to every part of the tree, so an offering made to Krishna, or any action done for Krishna, is to be considered the highest welfare work for everyone, because the benefit of such an offering is distributed throughout the creation. Love for Krishna is distributed to all living entities. While Lord Krishna was speaking to Sudama Vipra, he ate one morsel of chipped rice from his bundle. And when he attempted to eat a second morsel, Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune herself, checked the Lord by catching hold of his hand. After touching the hand of Krishna, Rukmini said, "My dear Lord, this one morsel of chipped rice is sufficient to cause he who offered it to become very opulent in this life and to continue his opulence in the next life. My Lord, you are so kind to your devotee that even this one morsel of chipped rice pleases you very greatly, and your pleasure assures the devotee opulence both in this life and in the next." This indicates that when food is offered to Lord Krishna with love and devotion, and he is pleased and accepts it from the devotee, Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune, becomes so greatly obliged to the devotee that she has to go personally to the devotee's home to turn it into the most opulent home in the world. If one feeds Narayan sumptuously, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, automatically becomes a guest in one's house, which means that one's home becomes opulent. The learned Brahmin, Sudama, passed that night at the house of Lord Krishna, and while there, he felt as if he were living in a Vaikuntha planet. Actually, he was living in Vaikuntha, because wherever Lord Krishna, the original Narayan, and Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune, live, is not different from the spiritual planets Vaikuntha Lok. The learned Brahmin Sudama did not appear to have received anything substantial from Lord Krishna while at Krishna's palace, yet he did not ask anything from the Lord. The next morning he started for his home, thinking always about his reception by Krishna, and thus he merged in transcendental bliss. All the way home, he simply remembered the dealings of Lord Krishna, and he felt very happy to have seen the Lord. The Brahmin thought, "It is most pleasurable to see Lord Krishna, who is most devoted to the Brahmins. How great a lover he is of the Brahminical culture. He is the supreme Brahmin himself, yet he reciprocates with the Brahmins. He also respects the Brahmins so much that he embraced to his chest such a poor Brahmin as me, although he never embraces anyone to his chest except the goddess of fortune. How can there be any comparison between me, a poor, sinful Brahmin, and the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is the only shelter of the goddess of fortune? And yet, considering me a Brahmin, he embraced me with heartfelt pleasure in his two transcendental arms." Lord Krishna was so kind to me that he allowed me to sit down on the same bedstead where the goddess of fortune lies down. He considered me his real brother. How can I appreciate my obligation to him? When I was tired, Srimati Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune, began to fan me, holding the chamra whisk in her own hand. She never considered her exalted position as the first queen of Lord Krishna. I was rendered service by the Supreme Personality of Godhead because of his high regard for the Brahmins, and by massaging my legs and feeding me with his own hand, he practically worshipped me. Aspiring for elevation to the heavenly planets, liberation, all kinds of material opulence, or perfection in the powers of mystic yoga, everyone throughout the universe worships the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Yet the Lord was so kind to me that he did not give me even a farthing, knowing very well that I am a poverty-stricken man who, if I got some money, might become puffed up and mad after material opulence, and so forget him. The statement of the Brahmin Sudama is correct. An ordinary man who is very poor and prays to the Lord for benediction in material opulence, and who somehow or other becomes richer in material opulence, immediately forgets his obligation to the Lord. Therefore, the Lord does not offer opulences to his devotee unless the devotee is thoroughly destitute. Rather, if a neophyte devotee serves the Lord very sincerely and at the same time wants material opulence, the Lord keeps him from obtaining it. Thinking in this way, the learned Brahmin gradually reached his own home. But there he saw that everything was wonderfully changed. He saw that in place of his cottage, there were big palaces made of valuable stones and jewels, glittering like the sun, moon, and rays of fire. Not only were there big palaces, but at intervals, there were beautifully decorated parks in which many beautiful men and women were strolling. In those parks, there were nice lakes full of lotus flowers and beautiful lilies, and there were flocks of multicolored birds. Seeing the wonderful conversion of his native place, the Brahmin began to think to himself, "How am I seeing all these changes? Does this place belong to me or to someone else? If it is the same place where I used to live, then how has it so wonderfully changed?" While the learned Brahmin was considering this, a group of beautiful men and women with features resembling those of the demigods, accompanied by musical chanters, approached to welcome him. All were singing auspicious songs. The wife of the Brahmin was very glad on hearing the tidings of her husband's arrival, and with great haste, she also came out of the palace. The Brahmin's wife appeared so beautiful that it seemed as if the goddess of fortune herself had come to receive him. As soon as she saw her husband present before her, tears of joy fell from her eyes, and her voice became so choked up that she could not even address her husband. She simply closed her eyes in ecstasy, but with great love and affection, she bowed down before her husband, and within herself, she thought of embracing him. She was fully decorated with a gold necklace and ornaments, and while standing among the maidservants, she appeared like the wife of a demigod, just alighting from an airplane. The Brahmin was surprised to see his wife so beautiful, and in great affection, and without saying a word, he entered the palace with his wife. When the Brahmin entered his personal apartment in the palace, he saw that it was not an apartment, but the residence of the King of Heaven. The palace was surrounded by many columns of jewels. The couches and the bedsteads were made of ivory, bedecked with gold and jewels, and the bedding was as white as the foam of milk and as soft as a lotus. There were many whisks hanging from golden rods, and many golden thrones with sitting cushions as soft as lotus flowers. In various places, there were velvet and silken canopies, with laces of pearls hanging all around. The structure of the building stood on excellent transparent marble, with engravings made of emerald stones. All the women in the palace carried lamps made of valuable jewels. The flames and the jewels combined to produce a wonderfully brilliant light. When the Brahmin saw his position suddenly change to one of opulence, and when he could not determine the cause for such a sudden change, he began to consider very gravely how it had happened. He thus began to think, "From the beginning of my life, I have been extremely poverty-stricken. So what could be the cause of such great and sudden opulence? I do not find any cause other than the all-merciful glance of my friend, Lord Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty. Certainly, these are gifts of Lord Krishna's causeless mercy. The Lord is self-sufficient, the husband of the goddess of fortune, and thus he is always full with six opulences. He can understand the mind of his devotee, and he sumptuously fulfills the devotee's desires. All these are acts of my friend, Lord Krishna. My beautiful dark friend Krishna is far more liberal than the cloud, which can fill the great ocean with water. Without disturbing the cultivator with rain during the day, the cloud brings liberal rain at night just to satisfy him. And yet, when the cultivator wakes up in the morning, he thinks that it has not rained enough. Similarly, the Lord fulfills the desire of everyone according to his position. Yet one who is not in Krishna consciousness considers all the gifts of the Lord to be less than his desire. On the other hand, when the Lord receives a little thing in love and affection from his devotee, he considers it a great and valuable gift. The vivid example is me. I simply offered him a morsel of chipped rice, and in exchange, he has given me opulences greater than the opulence of the King of Heaven." What the devotee actually offers the Lord is not needed by the Lord, for he is self-sufficient. If the devotee offers something to the Lord, it acts for his own interest, because whatever a devotee offers the Lord comes back in a quantity a million times greater than what was offered. One does not become a loser by giving to the Lord. He becomes a gainer by millions of times. The Brahmin, feeling great obligation to Krishna, thought, "I pray to have the friendship of Lord Krishna, and to engage in his service, and to surrender fully unto him in love and affection, life after life. I do not want any opulence. I only desire not to forget his service. I simply wish to be associated with his pure devotees. May my mind and activities be always engaged in his service." The unborn Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, knows that many great personalities have fallen from their positions because of extravagant opulence. Therefore, even when his devotee asks for some opulence from him, the Lord sometimes does not give it. He is very cautious about his devotees, because a devotee in an immature position of devotional service may, if offered great opulence, fall from his position due to being in the material world. The Lord does not offer opulence to him. This is another manifestation of the causeless mercy of the Lord upon his devotee. His first interest is that the devotee not fall. He is exactly like a well-wishing father who does not give much wealth into the hand of his immature son, but who, when the son is grown up and knows how to spend the money, gives him the whole treasury house. The learned Brahmin thus concluded that whatever opulences he had received from the Lord should be used not for his extravagant sense gratification, but for the service of the Lord. The Brahmin accepted his newly acquired opulence, but he did so in a spirit of renunciation, unattached to sense gratification, and thus he lived very peacefully with his wife, enjoying all the facilities of opulence as prasadam of the Lord. He enjoyed varieties of foodstuffs by offering it to the Lord and then taking it as prasadam. Similarly, if by the grace of the Lord we get such opulences as material wealth, fame, power, education, and beauty, it is our duty to consider that they are all gifts of the Lord and must be used for His service, not for our sense enjoyment. The learned Brahmin remained in that position, and instead of deteriorating due to great opulence, his love and affection for Lord Krishna increased day after day. Material opulence can be the cause of degradation and also the cause of elevation according to the purposes for which it is used. If opulence is used for sense gratification, it is the cause of degradation, and if used for the service of the Lord, it is the cause of elevation. It is evident from Lord Krishna's dealings with Sudama Vipra that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very, very pleased with a person who possesses brahminical qualities. A qualified Brahmin like Sudama Vipra is naturally a devotee of Lord Krishna. Therefore it is said, Brahmana Vaishnava. A Brahmin is a Vaishnav. Or sometimes it is said, Brahmana Pandita. Pandita means a highly learned person. A Brahmin cannot be foolish or uneducated. Therefore, there are two divisions of Brahmins, namely Vaishnavs and Panditas. Those who are simply learned are Panditas, but not yet devotees of the Lord or Vaishnavas. Lord Krishna is not especially pleased with them. Simply the qualification of being a learned Brahmin is not sufficient to attract the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not only must a Brahmin be well qualified according to the requirements stated in the scriptures, such as Srimad Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, but at the same time he must be a devotee of Lord Krishna. The vivid example is Sudama Vipra. He was a qualified Brahmin, unattached to all sorts of material sense enjoyment, and at the same time, a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna, the enjoyer of all sacrifices and penances, is very fond of a Brahmin like Sudama Vipra, and we have seen by the actual behavior of Lord Krishna how much he adores such a Brahmin. Therefore, the ideal stage of human perfection is to become a Brahmin Vaishnav like Sudama Vipra. Sudama Vipra realized that although Lord Krishna is unconquerable, he nevertheless agrees to be conquered by his devotees. He realized how kind Lord Krishna was to him, and he was always in trance, constantly thinking of Krishna. By such constant association with Lord Krishna, whatever darkness of material contamination remained within his heart was completely cleared away, and very shortly he was transferred to the spiritual kingdom, which is the goal of all saintly persons in the perfectional stage of life. Shukdev Goswami has stated that all persons who hear this history of Sudama Vipra and Lord Krishna will know how affectionate Lord Krishna is to the Brahmin devotees like Sudama. Therefore, anyone who hears this history gradually becomes as qualified as Sudama Vipra, and he is thus transferred to the spiritual kingdom of Lord Krishna. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the third volume, 12th chapter of Krishna, the Brahmin Sudama, blessed by Lord Krishna.